tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ saṅghaṃ namassāmi. So good morning, everyone. Well, welcome to this gathering and it's a opportunity for the sort of those interested in the Clear Mountain project, trying to create a clear mountain. sort of Ajahn Nisipo, Ajahn Kovilo have been, so this is the third year, and there's a definitely a momentum gathering, which is very nice to see. And that momentum and is, you know, it's important that you pay attention to the foundations. I mean, sort of speaking to the whole community, I think one of the things that I remember when Ajahn Amaro, when he and I were setting up or agreeing to sort of go into this venture of starting a Bhayagiri Buddhist monastery, one of the visions he had was that it was the opportunity to create a traditional form to America. And I think that's one of the things that we can do as monastics is represent an ancient tradition. And the principles that the Buddha laid down of teaching and training, how to train the heart and how to create an understanding of this human condition in a way that allows us to experience a sense of peace and well-being. And to do that, because I think there's harkening back to the Ajahn Amaro thing, that setting up something that did bring these aspects of tradition here in a way that is relevant to a modern time. He said, you know, there's lots of, and especially this was in the Bay Area, so I was thinking San Francisco Bay Area, there's lots of meditation centers, there's lots of retreat centers, but there isn't really a monastic form. So being able to do that, and it does require a certain conditions that are supportive, so that finding and for Ajahn Amaro and for us, I mean, he actually sort of said, well, I think we've got to be at least between 2 and 3 hours out of San Francisco for us to survive. And I think that has sort of held true. So that having a place that is a refuge, but it's not so far away, and I know that there's a, you know, trying to find a suitable property that is within reasonable striking distance of Seattle, without getting too far away, not getting too close. And too close means it's just ridiculously expensive, as well as being, you want to have an environment that you can go into and actually let the city drop away behind you. And so there's lots of, I think they've been, looking at all sorts of places and properties. Yesterday morning, Allison sent a listing, a new listing, to consider. So there's lots of consideration and reflection going into it, and I think one of the things that's more important is paying attention to laying your foundations of the Dhamma principles in your group, and of course that starts with the monastics setting a decent example, and that because you've got to walk your talk, and it's actually, and there is a the old English adage, talk is cheap. So it's important that monastics and then the lay people who are drawing close, because there's inevitably people who really, are quite central. They say the board is very central, and then sort of concentric circles of involvement. So that being able to have that commitment to practice and training and commitment to the Dhamma, it's really important. And of course the foundations are refuges and precepts. It seems like an innocent enough ceremony to start a day with, but once you start reflecting on it, you start realizing, oh, that's actually quite central to the whole endeavor of whether one is a layperson or a monastic. How do we live with a refuge and a foundation in virtue and integrity? And it's helpful to have these fundamental guiding principles to be a touchstone, and take them on, and taking it on as a training. This is a on a certain level there as say Americans. There's a fundamentalist streak in America that is can easily be translated into Buddhism as well, because it's trying to find things that are absolutely right and absolutely wrong, absolutely good, absolutely bad, and then rest content with that. But this is it's an ongoing reflection and training, an ongoing exploration of what is it that because the Buddha's foundation or central goal is not sort of absolute purity. It is freedom from suffering, or absolute happiness and bliss. Because how do we free the heart from its tendency to be agitated or disturbed or discontent, and know, we can get discontent with when things are going all good and going right for us. How do we recognize that? So that sense of paying attention to the training of the heart and coming over in the car this morning with our driver and talking about, you know, just the challenges of living in the world and keeping precepts and doing that in the midst of a family life where not everybody's on the same page and navigating all of the world of relationship and then precepts and family life, so and I'm trying to emphasize, and I think it's something that I bring up over and over again with the monastics as well, that certainly for Ajahn Chah, the purpose of sila, of precepts, is much more for an understand. It's a reflective tool for understanding volition. It's like, how do we understand our own minds? Not so much getting at things absolutely right all the time and resting comfortable in that I'm finally right. It's what's the volition behind that? What's the mental state behind? What is the impulse behind things? Because that's where we create our happiness, that's where we create our suffering. And so that is and learning how to relate to the Buddha's training in a way that makes it a certain clarity and confidence, so that there's one of the, say, the goals of and one of the images that I always find inspiring is one of the goals of practice is a sense of unshakability. There's a sense of stability, firmness, unshakable quality of the heart that is not perturbed when there are discrepancies or challenges. It's sort of one has the confidence and trust in these principles of the Dhamma, of the refuges and the precepts, that one is has a certain solidity and clarity. So doing that as an individual, doing it as a group, and I think the building community is just so. I mean, it's so important any time. I mean, it's certainly something that the Buddha placed tremendous emphasis on when he began his teaching dispensation, and has carried through. And I think it's also that which carries the Buddha Dhamma onto the next generation, onto the next people, and say in this case onto the next continent. It's the principles of community, and so that building community with the clarity of one of purpose, but then also. How do we live it again? How do we walk our talk? One of the things that comes to mind is that, of course, in Buddhism, the principles are going to be grounded in a quality of that which is wholesome, skillful, beneficial, and it's a term that. In the Pali, say the kusala, and as opposed to being sort of say absolutely right, or absolutely good. What is wholesome? What is skillful? What is beneficial? Both for oneself as well as for others. And there's a set of teachings which most certainly in Thai tradition, and I think probably throughout the various Theravada Buddhist traditions, that comes up over and over again as the foundations of the wholesome. And as a shorthand, dana, sila, bhavana, the generosity, giving, sharing, dana. Sila as the precepts, but then virtue and integrity, and bhavana, the meditation, cultivation is probably a better word than meditation, because bhavana is much more how do we cultivate and develop mindfulness and clarity in all of our postures, all of our activities. And so that sense of laying, having this foundation of the wholesome, of the skillful, as a basis for cultivating our community, since today's a day of a robe offering, it's creating an occasion where we all come together, and there's a sharing and giving. Giving of food, giving of resources and requisites for the development of the future. So it's like a fundraising. So there's giving. But it's also important to reckon when we start talking about giving that there is a a sense of there's material giving. But then also acts of service and just being able to help in different ways, and especially as we're building community, what are the different ways we can help? I think Ajahn Nisibo and Ajahn Kovilo are encouraging people in really skillful ways in terms of creating involvement. And one of the things I just heard about being here is just there's like a gratitude coordinator. Just calling up people and sort of thanking them for the expressing gratitude. I mean, it's incredibly skillful. I think, what do we do to buy gear? I hope it doesn't go into a void completely. So that's a really skillful way of people acknowledging people's generosity, and makes it very meaningful to one, the people who have shared and give and shown their generosity, and then also for volunteers to help to kind of solidify, acknowledge that and solidify that. So it creates a community involvement, and so the finding ways to do that and different acts of service. Like an event like this doesn't happen without a lot of volunteers helping to make it happen. And the cleanup after certainly doesn't happen without people helping out. So there's that sense of that is dana as well. I mean, it's not about the material giving. It's also an aspect of dana part of abhayagiri. The word abhaya literally means fearless, but it's also it has a connotation of forgiveness as well, so that the An aspect of dana is abhaya dana, the giving, being willing to forgive, being willing to give a sense of safety and security, because it's hard to feel ease and comfort around somebody who's holding a grudge. And it's hard for yourself to feel comfortable if it's like that. Nursing one's wrath is a primary feature. It might be very logical and justifiable in a rational way, but it doesn't brighten the heart and doesn't end suffering. That's for sure. So that sense of generosity in these different ways, as I was saying, there is the material and it's really important, and we wouldn't get to eat today if people weren't willing to bring food, and we wouldn't been able to eat yesterday or tomorrow for monastics and I mean, yesterday we went, they took me to Pike Place. I've never been to Pike Place Market before, and I experienced it in a very different way than most people experience Pike Place. I mean, I went there as an alms mendicant and was sort of, I don't know how many times I had to empty the bowl because it was, so many people wanted to make offerings. Really, very inspiring. And then that was shared out to all sorts of different people. So the generosity keeps giving gifts, and the involvement and creating a field of goodness to be able to abide in. It's something that we all can participate in. And as monastics, we have the wonderful opportunity to help be a catalyst for that, encouraging people to live with a foundation of generosity, living with a foundation of sila. It's not just about keeping rules. Again, it's around this sense of understanding the impulses of the heart, but then learning how to live with a virtue and integrity that is an underlying principle of how we relate to each other as human beings. And Ajahn Nisipo alluded to that in one of the discourses of the Buddha. The Buddha saying this is Mahadana, sort of the great gift. And oftentimes when you think of great gift, how much money is great? but as the Buddha sort of immediately takes it beyond the material giving and the keeping of precepts, refraining from these aspects of harming and say untruth, infidelity, of refraining from heedlessness. That's a great gift, because it gives the qualities of safety and security, and gives the feeling of a sense of closeness. So we do that through our living of precepts and so learning how to hold the precepts in a way that is a great gift to others. I mean, it's a great gift to ourselves, certainly. But then it creates these bonds of harmony that are important to be nurturing and nourishing, so that we and that's also how we create a web of kalyanamitta, of good spiritual friendships. And so that, you know, sometimes living in the monastery for us monastics, you know, we do have a kind of a ready-made set of Kalyana Mitta. And Kalyana Mitta doesn't mean you actually have to like each other all the time. It's, but you feel you can trust them and feel secure around them. And that's, again, it's an incredible gift. So that building our relationships on this sense of trust and virtue and integrity. So that building our community on that foundation, generosity of integrity, and a commitment to training the heart, bhavana. There's, you know, the fundamental training is just acknowledging when it's okay to make mistakes. It's okay to mess up if you learn from it. It's when you just keep making the same old mistakes all the time is you really undermine yourself and people start avoiding you. So, but that willingness to learn is just so much a part of a bhavana, taking an interest in the process of learning. And what can I learn from this situation? What can I learn from, say, a big gathering like today? What can I learn from my fellow human beings? What can I learn from stepping back and being in solitude? And the whole spectrum are opportunities for learning. And that is, bhavana literally means bringing into being. So bringing into being a sense of interest and curiosity about what's true, what's not true, what's beneficial, what's not beneficial, what leads to suffering, what leads out of suffering. And I think that's the biggest sort of question to be asking, because that's what the Buddha is. Really pay attention to dukkha and the ending of dukkha. And he says it over and over again through the sutta. I teach only two things, dukkha and the ending of dukkha. So taking an interest in that. Because we can have things figured out on an idealistic, rational level and still be miserable. What's the source of dukkha? How do we be free from this dukkha? So this bhavana, and of course, cultivation of mindfulness, cultivation of a calm abiding of the heart, and a cultivation of reflection and investigation. And these are all factors of development. And it's something that you can pursue together. I mean, I think there's, again, just sort of as a community, you're developing means whereby you can be exploring some of your Zoom groups and your in-person meetings, or exploring the different ways you can develop this practice and training. And I just encourage you all to not get locked into. I gotta meditate all the time to be a good Buddhist. And just learn how to make your meditation something enjoyable, and that you actually learn from and develop clarity and well-being from. And there's many different ways, and make the dana and sila a part of that whole process, the community a whole part of that process, and you'll find that you yourself will probably become a better human being and a happier one, and you'll have a community to keep doing that with. So I'll offer that for reflection today.